to the Men of Ink Gang podcast, number 92. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Greetings from freezing Bloomington. I almost froze myself out putting the garbage out this morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning, and how are you? I hope everybody is doing well. It's nice to have the music back, Steve. He's going to do a rig setup so we can actually hear his,
there we
his
go.
Music now. I love that.
Yeah.
And Graham sounded like he was on stage there for a minute.
Yeah, he did sound echoey for a minute. Yeah. I was wondering if that was me or...
No.
Cleveland!
Well, this show, we've got a nice guest on in a moment, and we'll do our weekend review, and we'll do our gang mentality and talk about upcoming events and so forth. But this week... who watched Apple? I know. We got to just at least mention it. But who watched the stream of Steve Jobs doing the announcements?
I definitely did.
Yeah, I did too. It was actually very, very good. I mean, as far as quality, it was really good. It stuttered a few times, but given how many people were watching it, it was their first time. I thought it was very impressive.
I was really impressed with the quality of that.
Steve Jobs was talking. You got that, right?
Yeah. But at the beginning, I thought, okay, they're live streaming this. They've got to have a streaming Apple TV.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. That's exactly what I thought.
It only made sense. They finally hired Akamai to do a live. This was the first time they've done that, right? The live audio feed.
They did one about 4 years ago.
Oh, they did? Okay, I forgot.
Yeah. But... It was like a Macworld keynote-y kind of a thing.
Oh, okay. But it's just been audio feeds that we've had to rely on and private ones, right? They haven't really sponsored even an audio feed of late, have they?
No, but 4 years ago they did a full video thing. But it was like a one-time deal, I think.
Well, and that was QuickTime streaming as well, and it wasn't that interesting. But this was embedded in the page. The quality was phenomenal.
So you watched it on your iPad, Steve?
I actually started watching it on my iPad and then came in and flipped it on my computer about halfway through and watched the rest of it.
You know what I thought was really weird? I was watching the Engadget live blog, which was quite good, while I had the live stream up in another window, and they were ahead of the live stream. I must just be because of where they were or something. It's like I'm reading the words of Steve Jobs before he even said them on the live stream.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's, Akamai's content delivery network, they have to store and forward all those packets and they do it based on demand around whatever servers. So if there are lots of people watching here, there's going to be latency. I even noticed that when I switched from my iPad to the MacBook, it was a few second delay.
Yeah. It was significant for me. I mean, Engadget was ahead by 3 or 4 seconds at least.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like even more than that, like maybe 5-6 seconds. I mean, those guys can type so freaking fast though. It's just amazing. Those live blogs. And did you see that TechCrunch did theirs with Scribble Live?
I noticed that.
Yeah. And our famous now lost forever tool because now they're charging big money for it.
Well, and for those that don't know who are listening, we used Scribble Live for several live blogs and we could embed it in a page on Minovate and they have an iPhone app and it was a great tool. And then they decided that not only were they going to monetize it, but it was going to be like $1,500 a month.
Yeah, they're aiming it at big media companies.
Yeah, exactly.
Now.
Yeah.
Well, and I used it a lot, like when I went to demo, and Glue and Defrag and everything. Now I don't know what the heck I'm going to do. Just live tweet, I guess.
Yep. Well, what did you guys think of the Ping development in iTunes, which is their new social network for iTunes?
I think that was the biggest announcement of the whole thing. And it's certainly caused the biggest furor afterwards with the whole, Facebook Connect thing. Is it or isn't it, What do you guys think?
It's a weird social network.
Yeah. Why do you say that?
Well, it's all built around music. And so it reminds me of MySpace from that perspective.
Okay.
And it's in a proprietary software, which is weird. I mean, it's, to me, a social network needs to live online. It needs to live in mobile devices, and this does neither.
Yeah, it's different, that's for sure. But, you know, it's only weird if you're not really into music that much. I mean, I'm kind of into music, but I'm not dying to get on there and socialize. But, hey, social music has been a big space that a lot of people have been trying to, you know, a lot of startups have been trying to, you know, take advantage of, capitalize on, and nobody's really done it in a big way. Well, I mean, Pandora is pretty big. You could say MySpace did it, you know, I guess, and many bands are on MySpace, but, you know, there are millions and millions of people that are really into music. And, for them, this is a pretty big deal, I would think. But what struck me is how it looks so similar to Facebook.
Did you guys
see that right away?
Well, you know what else? Not only did I see that, but I began to think about where this will be in a year or 2 years or 3 years, because I was reading a guy's blog who does video, or he writes for New TV, which is one of Giga Ohm's publications, mm-hmm. writing about MP4s and how the critical mass of QuickTime that has shown up on PCs because of all the people that have iTunes on PCs. He was surprised that Apple hasn't come out publicly and boasted about how many, you know, what their penetration is of QuickTime globally. And it's his conjecture that it's all about stealth implementation of QuickTime, because now everybody's got the codec on their computers, which means that they can do more and more in terms of delivering, you know, standard content, you know, delivering MP4s, and how you really should do MP4s now, because both platforms can deliver that, and you can see it on an iPad or an iPhone. And so I'm wondering if there's some stealth thing here with this iTunes social network. I don't know. What do you think, Phil?
You know, it'll be interesting. I mean, I think that it's, you know, maybe a bigger, not as big a deal as everybody wants to make it. I think, you know, everybody wants to have some sort of social interaction now. Granted, iTunes is probably one of the bigger players, but, you know, I think it'll start out as a big pissing match and then probably just kind of fade into the woodwork, and everybody will be big kumbaya and everybody will work together. So I just, you know, Facebook is still the dominant player in social networking, and it doesn't take any particular, you don't need any specific handheld or, you know, MP3 device to access it. So I just think it'll sort of settle out.
Work itself out. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's it. I mean, I love the fact that, you know, Apple is stepping into the fray, but I don't think Steve Jobs looks at it as the future of the company by any means.
No.
I think it's more of a, you know, pointed stick than anything.
And then what about the $99 Apple TV? I was interested in it because I realized that, Boxy, can do essentially what this device does. It's going to be more money. The Roku box does a lot of those same sorts of things.
But not nearly as many. And it's only $60, but, you know, for $99, you can do a whole lot more with the Apple TV.
Yeah, yeah. But what'd you think about just having two networks, ABC and Fox?
Yeah, that was the downside. You know, he commented on that he thinks the other studios will come around, but that was immediately flagged out, you know, in media coverage that, hey, he doesn't have that many networks behind it. And the ones that are behind it are just saying, well, we're working with them for a few months. You know, it's like they aren't even fully committed to it.
Yeah. Well, CBS has always been very protective of their video content. They don't post a lot of video, so I think it's not out of form for them at all.
No, probably not. But it remains to be seen. It's going to, you know, it's stepping up to be a battle now between Apple and Amazon too on pricing TV show rentals. I guess it's all a rental model now, and that's the big change.
Yeah.
What happens to all the iTunes content though that's there now that you can, you know, buy for $1.99? I mean, this box apparently doesn't read it, but you can still do it on your iPod, or how does that work?
I suppose, yeah. I doubt that they'll take it down, but I haven't looked into that.
Yeah, there was more questions about the device from my perspective. I mean, it looks like, and he didn't say specifically, but from all indications, it's running iOS, so it's like an iPhone sort of device.
Right, right.
And how come the only app is Netflix? How come they didn't open this up as an app platform? Because, you know, something like this with the Hulu Plus app and maybe a few other, you know, video like Revision 3 and Twit Network, I mean, that makes it a lot more compelling to me than just Netflix.
Yeah.
And the two networks that they have.
Yep, exactly.
So, yeah, just before we hop off and bring Leaf on board to chat a little bit about what's going on in his
Our
world.
Guest.
Let me ask you. Is anybody getting tired of the Apple events? Aren't they happening just a little too often these days?
Well, they're twice a year, basically, aren't they?
Isn't that like one time too many?
I mean, I don't think so.
They always have to do something before the holiday season, and they do something at the beginning of the year. So that's their, that's what they do. They do something every 6 months.
This is their lineup for the holiday season, and it's going to be a blowout if you ask me. I mean, the iPod lineup was pretty cool. So I think they're going to have one hell of a holiday season.
Well,
yeah, they'll sell a lot of them.
Yeah, they will. Well, I also, just one more quick comment before we bring Leaf on, our guest, that the Apple TV and those sorts of things, Google TV, Boxy, all of that, does present an interesting opportunity for education delivery, for, you know, entrepreneurs and startups to, you know, take their value proposition or the thought leadership and create a channel, quote unquote, where they can maybe curate content or create their own original content. I mean, there's a lot of really interesting opportunities because this thing will play video podcasts and so forth. Be very easy to do that. I mean, I looked at that with a Boxy box right away. So that's food for thought for people. And
yep.
Thinking about channels, our guest who we're going to have on, Leaf Larson from Workface, has created a very interesting platform called Business Card 2, which, if you sign up and do it, you end up with this portable container, this channel for yourself that you can move around at will, put on your blog and stick on Facebook and so forth. And let's bring on Leaf and talk to him because they just announced an acquisition they'd made. And we can ask him about that and what's going on with these guys and why they did it, and so on. Leaf.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Steve Borsch here. I'm on with Tim and Phil and Graham.
Hey, Leaf, how you doing?
Morning, Leaf. Good morning.
So, I kind of announced you and said who you are and so on, but can you just tell our listeners a little bit about your background and I mean, you're obviously a serial entrepreneur and you've done a lot of interesting things that I know about, but other people don't.
you're only as good as your last deal, right?
Yeah, right.
So I came from the farm fields of Wisconsin and always had a passion for technology. I actually started programming at a very young age. I was, think I was either 9 or 10 when I got my first computer, and I wrote my first program at about age 12, and I picked up my first large corporate client at age 14. So I, you know, have always been around computers, even though I came from very much a farming community. That led into me creating a company at age 18. And I moved that business over here to the Twin Cities. I transferred from the University of Wisconsin to the University of Minnesota and went to school pretty much part-time while I was working full-time and got into self-service interactive kiosks. And so that was sort of my claim to fame in my late teens into my 20s and sold that company off at age 28 and moved on to the optical disc area. And moved out of that area in 2005 and started screwing around with creating a framework here at our current company in 2005, and we created the company in 2006. So outside of that, you know, I dabble with a lot of entrepreneurial pursuits and helping entrepreneurs. We see a lot of deal flow through here with younger entrepreneurs that are looking for help. And I work as a mentor over at the Carlson School of Management. And
oh, I didn't know that. How long have you been doing that?
I think that this is my fifth year now. And we also hire a lot of interns from over at the University of Minnesota. So I, you know, try and stay really active in the entrepreneurial community. You know, I labor too.
That's from
something like that.
Student labor. I mean, not slave labor.
Well, and you and Leif, you have this is Graham. You have a lot of contacts in the developer community too. You're quite wired into the developers in town.
I am. I'm just passionately in love with technology and, you know, how it can create efficiencies. And I love meeting with these developers here in this part of the country. I think they've got a little bit of magic that I don't see having worked with developers, you know, sort of the East Coast, West Coast. You know, there's just something a little bit of a different flavor here in the development community in the Twin Cities. So yep. I try and stay as tapped into them as I possibly can. So, one thing I learned really early on is, you know, to be a good entrepreneur, you have to surround yourself with smarter and better people. And I've been fortunate to tap into those type of people here.
Yeah,
that's great. Well, hey, one little known fact I have to bring up about Leif. He went to school, all through school, right, in central Wisconsin with Marissa Meyer of Google. Is that correct, Leif?
Yeah, that's correct. I actually sat next to her for a couple of years. So,
you know, high school or?
Yep. We were in the same high school together. We had a rather peculiar high school, or I should say a little bit of an original high school. We were on one of seven programs in the U.S. that that had a modular system. So we had a pretty stringent, tight schedule with our classwork, and we did a lot of advanced placement education, not as an option, but more a forced curriculum there. And so I knew Marissa as, you know, not only someone who sat by me, but, you know, also someone who was passionate about, you know, technology as well. So
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's helped a lot in terms of all kinds of goodness with Google, right?
I congratulate her on her success. For me, I think I've been focused in a different area of technology, but I think, you know, some of the moves and decisions I see her making, I wonder how much of it had to do with, you know, our background and how we grew up. So,
yeah,
that's really interesting. Yeah. Well, it's cool to have another connection in town to Google. You know, I know Joe Shriver used to work for Marissa too. He was hired by her back in 01, I think. And so it's fun to look at these, you know, one degree of separation kinds of things we have going on in town here. But she's pretty hard to get to now, I imagine, right, Leif?
You know, I wouldn't try and actually contact her for business purposes. I think that would probably lessen, you know, you know, any of the personal relationship. But, you know, I have no doubt she's an incredibly busy woman. So,
yeah. Well, so you have big news that came out yesterday. That
a couple days ago now, wasn't it Wednesday?
Or? Oh, the first. Yep. Sorry. I just... You know, obviously, Business Card 2 is continuing to accelerate and moving in the right direction and all of that. And the announcement was you guys bought Cardly.
Yeah, we did. That just went through this week. In fact, if you would have talked with me on Monday, I wouldn't have known if the deal was going through or not. And I'm the CEO over here. So, you know, we worked on creating an interactive business card back in 2006 and then broke that off as a standalone service in 2007. And we've been out there monitoring, you know, cool products and potential competitors for some time. And Cardly caught our eye when they launched in 2009. and Dan at the Harkness Labs, who is the creator of Cardly, did some really good things with the service. But as I had conversations with him, I think he really understood how driven we are to power the business card of the web.
Yep.
And he himself has been very busy with the success of one of their products, which I'm a big fan of, called Tiny Chat. And so, we put our heads together and closed on the deal this week. The benefit for us is getting to tap into all those incredible users of Cardly. They had over 40,000 users of the system. So,
really?
Yep. Wow. Yep. So we're doing a roll-in plan from Cardly into Business Card 2. And so we've just gained access to thousands of product engineers around here at our office. Our users and customers have always been our greatest innovators. And I think we've already had over 100 emails from Cardly users with ideas and suggestions on what they'd like to see in an internet business card. So the benefits have already started for us.
Yeah, that's great.
Where's Cardly based, and how many people were involved in it?
Oh goodness, don't quote me on this, but I want to say that they're in Waltham, Massachusetts.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, right.
Yeah, I really don't know how many people they had on their team, and we didn't bring any bodies over as part of the acquisition.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
We did not. I think any of us guys that are working in this SaaS PaaS space right now, it's all about trying to stay lean and and mean right now. It's pretty incredible, some of these business model advantages that we're seeing within this space. The SaaS PaaS space has matured over the last 3 years and really is providing some fundamental long-term growth opportunities while staying lean. There's relatively modest direct variable expenditures, limited incremental investment that's required. You start to see the recurring revenue as a predictable revenue stream. It's been less sensitive to economic cycles, and yet it hasn't really required the type of headcount that you might have seen even 4 or 5 years ago. There's also a reduced likelihood of fundamental business failure, in my humble opinion, just because you can keep lean. But I have some conflict with that, because we want to be an employer. We want to be hiring bodies, especially in this economy right now. But we're trying to be cautious too.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about Cardly is the founder, Daniel Blake, is that his name?
Yep.
Dan. Wanted to, according to the TechCrunch piece on the acquisition, is focusing on his new startup, which has apparently taken off this year. It says the Tiny Chat, right?
Tiny Chat, and I'm not paid for this plug here, but I'd love to put in a plug for Tiny Chat. I think Dan's done a great job with the product. I don't know what kind of language I can get away with here, but that chat roulette service, in my opinion, is full of nothing but a bunch of dicks. And
literally. No pun intended.
Yeah, and they pulled down their service and said, they're going to be releasing, this new greater dick-free service in the last couple weeks here, and it's been anything but. And yet I see, Dan, fighting in the trenches here to try and really grow up Tiny Chat, and I think he's got a superior product. I think that the interface is great. He's really been delivering a wonderful tool for trying to connect people face-to-face through video. And so, I encourage people to check it out.
Say, I see Robin Waters of TechCrunch, the Brussels-based guy, did the piece on your acquisition. And he's a friend of Daniel's. Is that how the story came about? Or did that surprise you that he picked up on it? Or did you know that was coming?
I think that I guess I knew or suspected that it was coming. I had actually sent over an email to Robin. So, he had covered Cardly in the past. So sure. It just made good sense to, talk with him and let him be the first one to know. He's also a user of the service. If you go to Robin Waters, that's actually resolving to his Cardly site right now. And we're not changing or affecting the service in any way right now. We do want to do a roll up, but we're staging this over time. Our first thing we wanted to do is get in there and know what everyone loved and didn't love about the service, and try and take that feedback and help that in our decision making process on where we're going to go from here. So
you won't do a dig 4.0.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
You know, we've learned other people's painful lessons by observation.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it does seem like Cardly has a lot of passionate users, though, Robin Waters included. But I notice there's a lot of chatter on Twitter about the acquisition. So, you know, it's definitely gotten noticed and got you on a much bigger map, I think.
Yeah, I think that it, you know, probably has raised the awareness. I mean, you know, I don't want to dismiss the fact that we've got a large and incredible user base with Business Card too, as well. And, you know, they I think they're excited around this too. The number one, I wouldn't say negative feedback, but the number one thing we've heard from Cardly users or concern has actually been about the length of our URL, which has surprised me. I could have anticipated a bunch of things about design or your social stream or whatever, some of the things we're not doing with Business Card 2 right now. But the number one request we've had is, hey, your URL is businesscard2.com. They have Cardly. It's shorter. What are you going to do about that? And, you know, just to let everyone know, we actually own the URL card2.com, which resolves the Business Card 2.
Exactly.
So we have a shortening service available.
Yep.
Yeah. Or how about Bizly? No, I'm
no. I tend to stay away from those LY companies.
Yeah, people are getting tired of that, I think, you know.
I would like to remind everyone that the registrar behind that is Libya.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh gosh.
Yeah, we don't want to give Muammar Gaddafi any money.
So one of the things I do like about Cardly is this idea of skins, so you can skin your card. Is that something one of those features that you'd like to kind of bring into Business Card too?
So we've been polling the users of Cardly and asking them about that. So far, it's actually the majority of people have said that it has not been a requirement for us. And I'd love to talk to that fact. Back in 2007, 2008, we actually had full card customization across the board. I mean, you could change anything that you wanted to, including colors. We had great color palettes in there. And we found out that it was really an underutilized tool. Maybe less than 5% of people actually use that. So as we looked at, you know, trying to deliver an end user visitor uniform experience, we decided let's go with one default thing. And I think that you see the same thing in Facebook, right? There's not a high level of customization. Most pages look the same. One of the benefits of that is that it really helps you to have a more stable environment. It's scalable. So we're not convinced yet that that's necessarily the direction that we want to go. But the designs that they do have out there are certainly creative. What Dan did is he encouraged some really top level graphic design guys to submit concepts around that. And so that's where they built all these skins that you can use for that. And that's a bit of a challenge for us because I think we're working in a little bit different direction. So, you know, I guess it's yet to be determined how we're going to go. I definitely think that there will be those group of people out there that appreciate that design component of it. And, you know, if we don't carry that on, we definitely could get some unhappy people out there. So we're most certainly taking it into consideration, but we just don't know yet.
Well, I just want to ask a quick question about the merging of the technology. So you guys are Flash based and you also have HTML5 on track. And then it looks like they're all JavaScript thick box based. They're using thick box. Thick box CSS in their demo anyway. Is it going to be a huge challenge to merge the two together? Or I'm assuming the data is separate from the presentation anyway, so.
Yeah, well, we're trying to move more towards technology agnostic, if you will. We were definitely publishing the card as a Flash, Swift for quite a while. But if you take a look at Business Card 2 now, just in the last 2 weeks here, all cards at Business Card 2 are actually HTML frame now. So that they're actually not entirely Flash anymore. When we're delivering the cards remotely, we are still doing that in Flash. And ultimately, we want to just drive whatever the best solution is for the environment that someone would be engaging with a business card. So if it's at Facebook, for example, right now, we're one of those few truly rich interactive units that can go onto a Facebook wall. You can actually publish your live interactive card to Facebook. We are delivering that as a Swift, but in other instances like iPhone browser, iPad, for example, we want to be delivering HTML, HTML5 there. So we just want to try and detect and deliver the best card for that user experience.
So speaking of mobile devices, do you look to provide some kind of, besides the presentation in those mobile browsers, some kind of a mobile app like, say, Bump does, so you could share information between users just from their devices?
We don't, no. Short answer, no. We have been trying to focus more on the web versus native applications. I still think that that is our battlefield. So strategically, we've been putting a lot more focus on winning in the web and before going over to native applications. The other thing is, fundamentally, I don't know if we want to or if we even will develop native applications for mobile. I find a lot of irony in, the walled garden concept of these native applications on these devices, very much like we're seeing, the desktop computing environment moving much more towards software as a service and doing everything browser-based. I find it funny that, we've got these native applications that are running out there. I think in the long run, everything goes back to the web. That's what we've been betting on thus far. But we've certainly looked at developing some apps, but we don't even have that in our tech roadmap right now.
Well, Leaf, you've clearly missed the point that the web is dead. Didn't you see Wired, for gosh sakes?
Yeah. I mean, come on, man.
I did see that, and I was.
They said so. Honest.
Yeah, and it was in print. If it had been on the web, then we couldn't believe it for sure. But it was in print.
Yeah, and so after reading that Wired, I thought, well, should I shutter the doors here and go home?
Yeah. But
I think I'm going to keep pushing on here. So
it's a semantics thing. It's internet. Internet live and well, web dead. I don't know.
Hey, I got one more question, Leaf.
Yes.
This sounded like it moved pretty quickly. I mean, obviously, you knew who Cardly was, and you'd spoken with the founder and so forth, and you admired what they're doing. But I'm curious to know, did this... The move to merge with them or acquire them, was this something you pushed through on your own, or how did your board, your venture backer get involved in this, and just how fast did this thing move?
So we started looking at this 5 months ago, right? And
we got
all of our stakeholders, involved and aware that, I had been talking more intimately with Dan about, the potential direction of a business card for the internet, not just on, potentially us getting together or us acquiring them, but, what fundamentally has to happen to make something like this work. And the due diligence on this was not simple. The final decision to purchase it was certainly not made lightly. Nevertheless, it's an attractive offering. Buying it has actually been the simple piece. The real challenge is, how we're going to be able to bring this into the fold and make sure that we're delivering an equal to or greater than user experience for those Cardly users. That is, where my heart is right now.
Yep.
Was it all stock deal or cash and stock deal?
It was purely a cash deal.
Oh, okay. Cool.
That's great.
You the man.
Yeah. Well, Leaf, continued success, and I really appreciate you carving out time to be on today.
Absolutely. Hey,
Leaf, did we mention that Minovate's for sale, by the way?
No, I'm sorry. As long as we got him on the line.
Yeah. No, if he's got cash.
Did I mention we're tapped out?
Yeah. Doggone it. I was going to just give you the ad. I was going to give you the address to send the UPS box full of cash to. But
only briefly, Leaf. Only briefly.
I'll send you a fruitcake in 3 months.
There we go. All right. Thanks, man.
Hey, congratulations, thanks. Leaf, to you and the team. And a lot of hard work is paying off, huh?
Nice job, Leaf.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. And all of you have a happy Labor Day and God bless the entrepreneur.
All right, man.
Perfect. You bet.
I second that motion.
All righty. Take care.
Thank you, too, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Sometimes the entrepreneur needs a little extra blessing, I'm telling you.
That's right. God.
Always, yeah.
Well, he's a good guy, and he I tell you, it's he and I have gotten together many, many times, and he's showing me demos of things and so forth. And he has the most important quality I see in an entrepreneur, which is he just keeps going and he makes the adjustments he has to make. But he's got his vision set and he's got his direction set, and he's like the Energizer Bunny. He just keeps going.
And
that's what makes it happen.
Yeah. So. He's a pretty amazing guy. Yeah. He's got that perseverance thing, and he has the vision. And then the third requirement of the CEO, did you see Fred Wilson blogged on that this week? He always watches how much cash is in the bank.
In the bank. I saw that. Yeah.
That's the third requirement. If you can't do those three things, hire smart people, you know, have the vision and know exactly where you are from a cash position. That's the three things a CEO has to do.
Yep. Yeah.
And Fred said, you know, you can do other things well too, but if you don't do those three things well, it's not going to work.
Well, that's actually a great segue into our gang mentality piece, because every morning I try to watch CNBC for about a half hour in the morning. And then I try to catch it if I can at lunch, for whatever period of time. And what's really clear is that mergers and acquisitions are just jumping like crazy. I mean, Avis is going after Dollar. Burger King, you heard about that thing that they're going to sell themselves for $3 billion to some capital group.
Going private again.
Yeah. Yep. HP won that bidding war for 3PAR, the storage company, who's, I think their big thing is cloud storage and cloud storage management.
Storage is hot.
So all these acquisitions are on the rise. And what does that mean for Minnesota startups and entrepreneurs? Are you guys seeing any potential for more exit?
I mean, storage being so hot, Compellent is being talked about a lot.
I saw that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Their stock has been trending up and they could be the next one to get taken out, which, as you recall, guys, I predicted at the beginning of the year. And another company I predicted I'm hearing things about too. But companies are, the big tech companies are so flush with cash. It's crazy. You know, they've been hoarding cash. And so what's likely to happen is more and more of these kinds of acquisitions. So this is where the action is, and it's good for the startups, maybe the private ones that haven't been able to go public because now they've got a potential exit.
Yep.
But the prices are getting crazy the way some of these things are being bid up. And storage cloud definitely is hot. I wanted to be at the VMworld event in San Francisco this week with 17,000 other people. I couldn't get out there, but I covered it and watched it pretty closely. There are people saying this cloud thing, you know, it's like it's getting to be like, you know, the .10 craze of internet craze. You know, it's out of control, but it's real. And, you know, it's going to spur a lot of acquisitions of startups that are getting traction in that space. I'm convinced.
Does it mean we're at the bottom of the recession?
God, we'd sure like to think so, but
because you'd think if you've got lots of cash and you want to grow out of this recession through acquisition, that might be why we see all this activity. Is that people, you know, businesses are thinking that we might be at the bottom?
Well, that businesses aren't investing that much in hiring, but they're certainly investing in acquiring strategic technology and jockeying for position, and the consolidation in IT, you know, and tech in general is in full force, you know, but tech is sort of its own economy, you know, I mean,
well, it is, here was the other thing though, that came clear thematically this week on CNBC was that, these M&A, all this M&A activity is all about the fact that there's a clear recognition that organic growth isn't going to happen. So we got to do it inorganically. And the only way to do it is to, even if you're a small company, a startup, is to buy you know, a customer base, a Cardly, for example, but to leap forward, because A, you can do it inexpensively, and B, there's a lot of willingness to sell. But yeah, I think it's that inorganic. Well, that's why I look at companies here like Crash Plan, for example.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I would see a company like that being a strong potential, especially with somebody in the mobile space that is doing something around Android, and they've got their own tablet and so forth, and now they want to, you know, be able to have Dropbox like functionality and be able to get to files, so I can back everything up from my computer and I can get to it from my tablet or my phone, regardless of who the vendor is.
Can they do that now? I thought it was just the backup service.
It is. No, I'm just saying it wouldn't be that hard to provide visibility into the files, I wouldn't think. No. Yeah, they're not offering
it. That'd be a great extension.
Well, it would. Yeah. Sorry, Crash Plan guys. I didn't mean to throw out a new feature. Steve Borsch demanding a new feature.
You're the business dev guy for
market development right there.
Market development.
Yeah. But the point, though, is that there could be some nice potential exit strategies for local startups and entrepreneurs here.
Oh yeah. There've got to be people looking at Crash Plan. I mean, all these companies tend to get, you know, feelers a lot. You know, what happens with the bigger companies, though, you know, is they hire these investment bankers that get out there and do the work of, right, you know, auctioning, getting an auction going, like Frank Quattrone did for 3PAR. You know, remember him from the glory days?
Sure.
He's the guy behind getting 3PAR such a huge valuation. I mean, the three VCs that invested in that company are coming out like three times ahead of where they were just earlier this year. You know, they're making multiple hundreds of millions of dollars on that deal.
That's incredible.
You know, so it's fun to watch the big ones, but there's going to be a lot of smaller acquisitions.
Yep.
Too. For sure. And it is going to affect local companies. It's the only exit for them, really. IPOs just aren't happening to any great degree.
Yep. Well, speaking of gatherings, social media breakfast is
that was a hell of a segue, Steve. Yeah,
I pulled that rabbit out of my hat.
And we were. What?
Gathering. Were you really talking about that? Sorry. Anyway.
You could just say moving on.
That was my
gathering on? No.
So upcoming events.
I should probably, we ought to just do a quick acknowledgement. There was another Java meetup yesterday I wanted to point out. I was at the Urban Bean after, you know, over almost 90 minutes in traffic to get there. What was deal yesterday?
Oh, well, it was the games. Are you talking about
that? No, it was yesterday morning. No, I didn't do the tweet up. Java meetup, which is another meetup. And about 50 people always gather once a month at Urban Bean. And it's a good social media. And we had great presentations yesterday on I believe LinkedIn was the topic yesterday. Was really, really interesting stuff. You know, sometimes it's good to revisit LinkedIn, because I think, you know, the four of us at least have probably been LinkedIn to death, but it was good to revisit some of the strategies afoot at LinkedIn. So congratulations to those folks. Another nice little meetup.
And but there was a tweet up last night with what's his name from Texas, Person. What's his first name? I'm blanking on
Brian.
His first name.
Brian Person.
Yeah, Brian. Yeah, yeah, Brian Person, the founder of Social Media Breakfast, did a tweet.
Give him a Chamber of Commerce day for SMB today, but.
Well, really? No. And did he? I don't know if he came to town just for the State Fair thing today, but holding a tweet up last night when all three of the sports teams are playing, I thought wasn't the greatest timing, but I suppose he's in town and that was his only choice, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. I wish I could have been out there this morning for the social media breakfast with my parka. Yeah. But there's just too much going on today, trying to finish up before the long weekend. But yeah. Upcoming events, Mima Summit, that's on the horizon. Minnesota Blogger Conference, which is wildly sold out for next Saturday. What other events?
Where are they doing that? Over at Coco?
Over at Coco MSP in downtown St. Paul, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a pre-event on Friday night.
Oh, really?
Drinking, I didn't know you about mean? That. Bloggers drinking? Look out.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to drink and they're going to drink and they're going to live blog about it.
Drink and blog.
Where are they doing that? At some bar in Lower Town or?
You know, I don't know. I'll have to look it up for the show notes now.
Okay.
Yeah. Dave, that's important stuff.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'll be out of town or I'd be there.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
So anything else that I'm, that's coming up? Well,
I'm going off to, right after that, to Demo Fall in Santa Clara. First time they've had it up in the Bay Area. So I'm looking forward to a week in California starting the morning of the 13th. And so I'll be tweeting my brains out from out there, or live blogging if I can figure out how to live blog now that we can't do Scribble Live.
Yeah, we'll have to come up with something else.
Oh, I'm sure there's somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll figure it out.
Rainmakers Conference.
Open up your wallet, pay for the Scribble Live.
Yeah, $1,500 my...
Yeah. Cover It Live is still around, right? Why don't you use that?
There you go.
Cover It Live is... I think they even have an iPhone app.
Hey, there you go.
That's an idea.
Going for that one.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll be hearing, from 60 or 70 amazing startups out there. Should be fun. I'm already going to be doing some briefings ahead of time with some. It's all embargoed until the morning of the 14th, though, when the event actually kicks off.
Yep. Well, Rainmakers Conference on the 23rd.
Yeah.
Is coming up, and then the MEMA Summit the following week.
And we're going to blog from both, right?
Right. And then, what else? That's about all.
There's something happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's got to be other things that we're forgetting, but September definitely things are picking up as far as events go.
Like crazy. All right.
Well, we will be back next week
with another edition of the Men of Aid Gang podcast.
Yeah, sounds great.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
Have a good one.
Take care. It was a good.
Hey, you too.
Yep.
And that pre-meeting on the 10th is at Club Jaeger, by the way.
Okay. Oh yeah.
Club Jaeger. There's a Club Jaeger? Details in. Yes, there is details in the show notes.
Yep. That's in the Warehouse District, I think.
Yeah, it's on Washington Avenue.
Yeah. Okay, so Minneapolis for the
7 to 10 p.m. next Friday, the 10th.
And you can meet Chuck Jaeger in person.
And it's called Don't Drink and Blog, which is.
Which is always good advice.
Yeah.
All right.
They're serving quitterinis apparently, amongst others.
Okay.
That's good.
All right. Take care, guys.
See you guys.
Bye bye.